From the newsroom of WBUR, I'm Darryl C. Murphy. Welcome to Consider This, from Boston, where the pandemic has pushed an already strained childcare industry to its breaking point. Parents are paying high costs for limited spots while providers work for low pay. This childcare crisis in Massachusetts is the subject of a new five-part series by WBUR senior education reporter Carrie Young and the rest of our education team.
We are in the WBUR offices today. There's a few people here.
We met with Carrie at the WBUR offices to discuss the series. We found her at her desk in front of a laptop and two monitors, not much else, since she usually works from home. We wanted to learn more about the first installment of the series, which focuses on the voices of eight local childcare providers, many of whom have either left or are leaving the industry because of unsustainable working conditions.
There were a lot of general labor market stories with, oh, there's lots of shortages of this kind of employee or that kind of employee. And I had started to hear about that in the childcare industry. So at the time in 2021, I checked the Bureau of Labor Statistics and it showed that the industry was 20% smaller when it comes to the workforce size than it was pre-pandemic. That number was just so staggering. And then it led to all kinds of other questions of like, okay, well, how does that impact supply in terms of slots for kids? And how does that impact quality of the education they're getting? And so the more me and the team started talking about it, it was like, okay, we have more than just one story here. And it kind of grew from there.
How did you start that reporting?
Many, many phone calls.
As always, right?
Yeah. There were many, many phone calls. It was interesting because it was easy enough, I guess, to find people who are currently in that job talking about like their current role, why they loved it. Mm-hmm. What was harder to get, what people were a little bit more apprehensive to talk about was their struggles financially, even struggles with things like the hours that a lot of these workers have to keep.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people were worried about losing their job if they spoke out about that kind of thing. But I think the industry is in such a place right now that, like, one of the sources I talked to, Kaya Savannah, she and even the school she worked for, the preschool she worked for, was like, yeah, great. Like, would you like an hour to do that out of your workday? Because, you know, that school was struggling too, and they want to keep people like her. So it was like, it's also reaching this sort of tipping point that people are kind of screaming for help. The schools are screaming for help, too. Yeah, it's not like schools are not paying their employees because they just can get away with it.
Right.
They're also running on super thin margins.
Right. And I would imagine some, like, people have a hard time talking about their own struggles, maybe because like there's a sense of guilt because other people have done, you know, the pandemic has been rough for some people more than others, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that word guilt, I'm glad you brought that up. That was something I heard a lot of from providers. You know, they loved the work they did. It's really a noble job to have of like caring for the community's children, right? But I mean, the reality is it wasn't just like, oh, I'm chasing a better opportunity. It was, I need to support my family. I need to survive. I need to, you know, it is stressful to live paycheck to paycheck like this. And so it's kind of a decision they made for the health of themselves and their family.
Right.
But it's hard to kind of square that in your head when you're making a decision like that.
Right. Right. Did anyone in particular stick out to you?
The first one was this woman, Vanessa. She just, you could just hear the passion in her voice when she was talking about why she loved her job and how gut-wrenching it was to leave. But I think some of her examples of like sort of that dichotomy really struck me because she told this very visceral story of like there were days when I would get pooped on, bled on, and then the one we included in the audio story was,
I remember one situation. I was wearing like an oversized, like a men's shirt, I guess, with the pockets in the front, and he had thrown up and the pockets filled with vomit. I just remember being like, this is happening.
I mean, it was just the kind of thing that you could just imagine and be like, oh, yeah. The other one that stood out to me too was Kaya Savannah. She had an experience that many childcare providers do, and that's that, you know, she was a single mom and couldn't afford on her childcare salary to provide care for her own child.
The last decision was to cut my hours. Cutting my hours meant getting paid less, but it
allowed me to qualify for a subsidized slot so I can afford a slot for my child.
That example was really striking to me, that not only that the people that work in this industry don't make that much money, but also the assistance that is there from the state just isn't enough.
Right. You kind of force people into a situation where they need assistance rather than meeting them where they are to help them get to where they need to be.
Yeah, that and just, you know, hearing from, you know, so people like Kaya make $15, $20 an hour. So that's $40,000 a year, maybe.
Yeah.
But even people who make significantly more than that struggle to pay for childcare for their family. It's, you know, that cutoff for the hardship assistance is so incredibly low. You end up with this really wide experience from people who you would think of as pretty solidly middle class, mm-hmm. still struggling a lot to pay for childcare.
So, like, what are some of the rates that people are paying?
So the rates that people pay in Massachusetts can vary a lot. It depends on the type of care that you're searching for. I know in-home care, which is formerly known as family child care, mm-hmm. tends to be a little bit lower. But overall, the state average for child care every year is about $20,000. And that's an average, keep in mind. So you can pay less, but some people are paying, I've heard of $24,000 a year, $30,000 a year. It's kind of like a college tuition.
Yeah.
Until your kids get to kindergarten, until they get to the public school system. Oof. So it is a huge chunk of people's budgets.
Now, I don't have children myself, and when I hear stories like this, I think really hard about whether I should. How often do you come across that in your reporting?
We have heard that from a lot of people who've either commented on the stories on social media or emailed me, you know, just trying to factor in, oh, maybe I want kids, but wait, how am I going to find care for them?
Mm-hmm.
Is sort of a swaying point that makes them think, maybe this isn't something that's good for my life right now. It's something that I've considered in the past, too. I had a very long period of time where I was single and thought, you know, I would still really love to have kids. But then when you do the math of, you know, how much you make, you don't make under that subsidy line. How do I find childcare when I don't live near family, especially?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's a huge factor for a lot of people.
And so what are the solutions? Like, what kind of solutions did you come across in your reporting?
So one researcher that I talked to, her name was Abby Copeman-Pettig. She's with UC Berkeley. They have a center there that studies this workforce a lot. And she put it really bluntly, but I think in a way that's easy to understand, and that is that
there are a lot of problems that can be fixed with more money, but this is absolutely one of them. For the most part, state systems and local systems can be really good at getting money to the programs and providers that need it and the families that need it. We just don't give them enough to do it.
By the time people hear this conversation, the series will have aired and published online. What's the biggest thing you want people to take away from it?
I think the biggest thing I want people to understand is how this system works, but also doesn't work,
mm-hmm.
and how close it is to kind of falling apart. And I don't want to be hyperbolic about that, but the pandemic really did show the weak points in the system, especially with a system where so many of the providers run on razor-thin margins. Many of the small business owners that I talked to that run centers, you know, said that they're only making it right now because of the help of extra state money, emergency
right.
grants they got from the pandemic. And so it's, you know, it's just, it's really on this fragile, it's walking this fragile line. And so I think that's one thing I hope people understand when they listen to this, whether it's, you know, from the workers' perspective of the high turnover, how, you know, that impacts supply of slots, but then also, you know, it just continues to go down the line.
That was WBUR senior education reporter Carrie Young. You can find more reporting on childcare in Massachusetts from Carrie and the rest of the education team at WBUR.org. Before we go, here's what else is going on. The search for Boston's next superintendent is almost over. Panel interviews begin today for two finalists, Mary Skipper and Tommy Welch. Whoever gets the job will steer the district through a tense time as state officials are pushing to improve services for students with disabilities and English learners. They are also urging for more reliable buses and quicker responses to bullying. State Education Secretary Jim Pizer says that means there is plenty of work ahead.
We want to continue to be working with the city and the district to make sure that regardless of who is actually named the superintendent, that we've got a strong, workable plan going forward for improvement.
Skipper's interviews are today and Welch's are tomorrow. A final vote is expected next week. Meanwhile, the number of deaths on Massachusetts roads is at its highest in over a decade. More than 400 people died on the road last year, a 22% jump from the year before. That's according to state transportation officials. And this year isn't looking any better, with the number of deaths trending even higher so far. And finally, Senate staffers on Beacon Hill got some good news yesterday. They'll be receiving a minimum 10% raise by the end of next month. The announcement comes nearly 3 months after a majority of Senate staffers announced their intent to unionize. Senate President Karen Spilka still has not formally recognized the union, and her office says the raises are unrelated to its efforts. And that's all for today. From the newsroom of WBUR, I'm Daryl C. Murphy. To whomever it may concern, it's okay if you need to stop and try something else. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Hey there. A lot of people listen to Consider This at the end of the day, and NPR's up first in the morning. But a lot of the actual news happens in the middle of the day, and the team bringing the best information about that news as it happens is the team behind WBUR and NPR show Here and Now. And yes, there is a podcast version. So, want more of the best news reporting from public radio around the country? Check out Here and Now. Find it in the same place you found this podcast wherever you listen. Just search Here and Now.